Good morning. This is Carol Ferreira, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the March 10th, 2021 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for the Credit Committee, Board of Commissioners, and specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during this meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the commissioners and participating staff to please mute your phone if you are not speaking. During the meeting, if anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
This is Carol Ventura. Nicole Clement, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Thank you, Carol. Good morning, everyone. This is Nicole Clement. Pursuant to Executive Order 20-46, extended by Executive Order 21-21, and as may be further amended or extended, this meeting is being held via teleconference. Members of the public can visit the Rhode Island Housing website to view the agenda and information on the actions being taken. In the event this teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until we can reconnect and audio is restored. I would now like to provide additional guidance to our committee members and staff as they participate in this meeting. Committee Chairman Kevin Orth will preside. Please remember to state your name prior to speaking and mute your telephone when you are not speaking. And now I will turn it over to Committee Chairman Orth to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much, Nicole. Now I'd like to call the meeting to order and thank you all for participating on this beautiful sunny day. And I'd like to ask Carol to conduct a roll call.
Thank you, Commissioner Orth. I will now conduct a roll call of members of the Credit Committee, Board of Commissioners in attendance, and staff of Rhode Island Housing. Chairman Nicholas Ratzinas.
Here.
Commissioner Kevin Orth.
Here.
Commissioner Maria Barry.
Here.
Commissioner Liz Tanner.
Here.
Staff of Rhode Island Housing, James Comer.
Here.
Lisa Primiano.
Here.
Carol LaChapelle.
Here.
Eric Shorter.
Here.
Christine Hunsinger.
Here.
Ann Berman.
Here.
Mike Liberatore.
Here.
Jeff Swanson.
Here.
Milton Baxter.
Here.
Nicole Clement.
Here.
CJ Rotella.
Here.
Commissioner, the roll call is complete.
Great. Thanks so much, Carol. I'd now like to introduce committee action item number one, which is the approval of minutes of our credit committee meeting held in February. I'd like to request a motion to approve, please.
So moved.
So moved. Oh, a second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion on these? Hearing none. Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote?
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of approving the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on February 10th, 2021, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Ratzinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. And good morning, Liz. Nice to have you join us. Thank you. We're just going to jump right into our, it's action number two, first transaction. It's the recommendation for firm approval of financing for securing the future, building the dream located in Woonsocket. And I'd like to introduce Milton Baxter, Division of Development, who will present this action item.
Thank you, Commissioner Orth. Good morning, everyone. This is Milton Baxter. Before the committee for recommendation for approval to the full board is a refinancing and transaction involving saving the future, building the dream. The sponsor of this transaction is NableWorks Blackstone River Valley, and they are seeking a $350,000 first mortgage $750,000 capital magnet fund loan, and also additionally seeking in a separate action $1.35 million in a preservation loan fund program, preservation loan fund program fund. This transaction involved the merging of two post-15-year LIHTC transactions. At the same time, the limited partner of those transactions, which is the National Equity Fund, will be exiting. The project features the reconstituted project with both developments merge, features 65 total units and 20 buildings located in the Constitution Hill neighborhood section of Woonsocket. Securing the Future was originally developed in 1998, and Building the Dream was developed in 2002. As part of this refinancing transaction, NeighborWorks is planning to do a moderate rehab of the 20 buildings, which include building envelope work, common area upgrades, select unit upgrades, interior upgrades, and some limited site work. The transaction features a rollover of about $5.3 million in existing soft debt. And Rhode Housing staff did evaluate the rollover request and determined that the rollover request did meet the requirements of Rhode Housing, which are outlined in the credit committee loan summary. There are a couple of deviations from our standard underwriting. One is that we used a 3% vacancy, where 5% is our standard guideline. And we mitigated this deviation based on the operating history of the property. They've had a long history of vacancy of less than 2%. There's also a deviation from underwriting in our year 15 debt service coverage requirement. It goes below 115, and in order to mitigate that particular deviation, we are funding a revenue deficit reserve of $100,000 to be available to make up any revenue shortfalls that might occur in those out years. So with that, that's sort of a summary of the transaction, and I'll ask if there's any questions that the committee may have.
Great. Thank you very much, Milton. I'd now like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action number 2 to the Board of Commissioners.
So moved.
So moved.
Okay. It's been moved or seconded. Any questions? Comments about this one?
I just had one question. So in addition to this and then being able to roll over the soft debt, are they needing any sort of, it looks like it's all balancing. So it seems like they're able to find enough in the project plus the supplemental pieces we're providing to make the rehab work. Is that my understanding correct?
Yeah, that is correct. So this transaction involves the $350,000 first mortgage and the capital magnet funds, and then there'll be a second mortgage of the $1.35 million in preservation loan funds. And then the existing debt, which includes, they are paying off about $250,000 in existing first mortgage debt on each of the properties. And then the targeted loans on those properties will be rolled over. And I should note that there are home loan program fund loans that are on both properties, each of $500,000, which total $1 million. And then there are also some lead fund program loans. Those are federally sourced funds that were put on the project back in when they originally developed. And we are having discussions internally about being able to discharge those. If we are able to discharge both the home and lead fund loans, then the total debt rollover will be just under $3 million.
Okay, thank you. And then just one other quick question from me. So it sounds like these must be in pretty good shape if it's pretty moderate. We have primarily exterior and then some upgrades, so it sounds like they must have taken good care of this given the age.
That's correct. So I've had the ability to actually be in these units, and they are in good shape. There are going to be some limited interior unit upgrades. They've done a very good job in going through every one of the units with a detailed inspection and determining, you know, what remains that is still serviceable and what remains, what requires upgrade. So the units will have some select interior upgrades, mostly fit and finish type stuff, and then some common area upgrades, and a large bulk of the work is the exterior. The units are very, have been kept very well. I think it's consistent with NeighborWorks Blackstone River Valley's operation of their projects. And I think at the end of the day, this is gonna provide these capital improvements will provide for an extended period of time, next 20 years, that the buildings will remain serviceable and very functional, affordable housing.
Okay, great, thank you.
I have just a couple of comments or questions. One, I'm pleased to see NeighborWorks. They've done a lot of good work in the area. It's nice to work with them once again. You know offhand what the total amount of the total capital value fund that comes to the state is?
I'd have to defer to Ann or Eric to answer that.
Nick, can you repeat the question? Are you asking how much capital magnet we've received?
Yeah, well, over the last year. This seems like a large percent, large number percentage-wise, but maybe it's not.
So this came out of the two – oh, go ahead, Eric.
No, I just wanted to make sure I understand the question in terms of the capital magnet for this project or overall?
Both. This project, I can say, but overall.
So to date, we've received between two allocations a little over $11 million in capital magnet.
Okay.
So for the two allocations that we received, I don't have the report up. We've dispersed the 2017 grant fully. The current grant, 2018,
Eric, I can jump in there. We've dispersed all but about $750,000 of that grant. And I would say that the grants have ranged from, you know, as small as $150,000 to as high as $999,000. We don't go over $999,000 because that triggers some additional environmental review. But $750,000 is... it's in line with several other awards that we've made.
Okay, thank you, Ann.
This is Kevin. I recall from our preliminary approval discussion, and then here again in the write-up for this one, that the risk or challenge is that the projects have been underperforming in recent years due to the sponsor's reluctance to raise rents. And I also see that is a requirement to doing a rollover of existing debt as to maximize the amortizing debt the property can support. So where do you see this standing on that issue?
Well, we've worked very closely with NeighborWorks to analyze the current rent roll and to determine what the threshold would be for raising rents. They're very sensitive to the affordability.
Milton, we lost you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. As I was saying, there's 65 households. NeighborWorks is very sensitive to the affordability issue. They're very concerned about raising rents to such a level that would make affordability difficult for those 65 households that currently occupy those units. That being said, they do realize that in order to support the amount of debt that they're putting on the property and that they would have to raise the rents and or find additional subsidies that will allow them to maintain the affordability at its current level. So we have analyzed that. They do have a plan in place that over the next 2 years, by the time this project is placed in service after this work is done, that they will reach a rent level that would adequately support the debt as indicated in the pro forma. their reluctance is not just being reticent to raise the rents. It's just in, you know, consideration of the affordability for those tenants that currently occupy the units.
Sure, understood. Okay. And then another question. The I didn't see it in the pro forma. Is there a percentage of cash flow that will go to repay the preservation loan?
Yes. So we will require 70% of the cash flow to be applied to the preservation loan.
Okay. Right. I don't have any other comments or questions. Maria or Nick, any?
No other questions for me.
Nope. Okay.
I'm good.
Okay. Great. Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote on this motion?
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for securing the future, building the dream to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Ritvenus?
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
Commissioner Barry?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's move on to committee action item number 3, which is the recommendation for firm approval of reservation of low-income housing tax credits for Paragon Mill located in Providence. And Mike Liberatore will be presenting this one. Mike, please take it away.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Commissioner. This is Mike Liberatore, and I would like to request firm approval for a reservation of up to 1,108,117 low-income housing tax credits for the Paragon Mill, located on a 3.2-acre site in Olneyville. The developer is a for-profit based out of Wisconsin called the Alexander Company, whose experience with mixed income and historic developments in the Mid-Atlantic and Midwest. This mill has been vacant since 2008 and was transferred to the Olneyville Housing Corporation, or from the Olneyville Housing Corporation to the Providence Redevelopment Authority in 2011. At closing, the PRA would sell the property to the Alexander Company, who will begin the environmental cleanup and redevelopment of the mill into 101 residential units, of which 44 will be restricted to 60% AMI, and the remainder will be restricted to 120% AMI. Citibank will be carrying the financial risk by providing a construction to permanent loan, which meets Rhode Island Housing Guidelines. The Providence Redevelopment Authority is also providing a subordinate loan. While Rhode Island Housing does not carry financial risk, we will carry reputational risk. The principals of the Alexander Company, Joseph and Nicholas, providing personal guarantees for repayment and completion of the project. I presume everyone had a chance to read through the credit committee request, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike. I'd like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action item number 3 to the Board of Commissioners.
So moved.
Second.
I believe I heard a motion and it was seconded. So now open.
Expand a second.
Okay, great. Thanks, Liz. Now open up for discussion or comments.
Have we ever worked with this developer before or the contractor?
Yes, with the contractor is Track. They've worked on a few of our light tech developments, but we have not worked with the developer in the past.
Good. I presume the reference text worked that turned out okay.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Did the reference checks turn out okay? Did they work in neighboring states at all?
Yeah, the PRA had sought out the Alexander Company based on their work in the past. They've done a number of mixed income and historic redevelopments. It works, you know, pretty impressive.
And Nick, I would just add to that, this is Ann, that one of our attorneys, Reno and Kavanaugh, has worked with them as well on other transactions and gave them pretty high remarks.
Good. I see the per-unit development cost of $349,000, which is at our ceiling, right? Is that recollect?
Our ceiling is 375, and they're at 350.
So they're pretty close to the ceiling.
Right.
And so I'm always bedeviled by this. I'm wondering if the ceiling went up to 399, whether we'd see more proposals at 399. I'm just trying to balance the right. We want to move forward with these, provide needed subsidy, but not unnecessary subsidy. And it just raises a question to me whenever I see it close to the lid.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think in this deal particularly, we only are investing the LIHTC credits. There's other subordinate financing that was outside of Rhode Island Housing's control. But it's definitely a concern. I don't think any of us were happy about seeing the cost. We're always discussing ways to keep costs down. The contractor did competitively bid the project for each trade, and they were awarded the contract based on a competitive process. I think there's a substantial increase in material costs. You may have seen this in other projects due to COVID. For example, lumber increased by 100% over the past year. So they incurred a lot of costs, as well as the environmental rehab on the project was significant.
Right. Thank you. No, it makes me, just as an aside, I grew up in Oneyville. I should have just stayed and bought more properties, I think, but for another time.
Given the big increase in costs, Mike, did this project need to be kind of reviewed to see if it would still qualify for the credits?
Maybe still
be awarded the credits, I suppose, because its ranking was based on a lower development cost.
Yeah, we looked at that. I think just to be fair, though, we'd have to re-rank all the projects, assuming they experience similar cost inflation. So to go back and rescore all the projects, I think we didn't do that. We didn't go back and rescore and reweigh the other projects that were awarded credits because each project is unique. After the award, each project experiences different costs. Inflation. In this case, Paragon faced additional environmental rehab when they started to drill into the slab and found solvents in the soil underneath the slab. So they had to install a mechanical ventilation system, which is expensive. It's about $1.5 million. So that plus the COVID factor, I think, kind of set this one apart. We've also seen on our other LIHTC deals, cost inflation from 9 to 15% historically. This one here, the overall TDC increase is about 20%, but they did add increased incentive developer fee, which is not paid, about $1.2 million in order to generate more historic credits. So if you look at the total development cost increase, it's been about 16%, so it's not completely out of line with our historic increase.
Okay. I'm excited to see this project go through. That's I see that most of this cost increase is being picked up by Providence Redevelopment Authority, and there's a lot of equity going into this and soft dollars and very limited risk to Rhode Island Housing. So. I'd very much like to see this one go through. I'm sure a ton of people would. It's been a project long in the coming. Liz or Maria, any comments or questions?
None at this time.
I'm all set too. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nicole. Would you please conduct a roll call vote?
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending firm approval of the reservation of low-income housing tax credits for Paragon Mill to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Rezinas.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Barry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. I'd now like to move on to committee action item number 4, which is a recommendation for firm approval of financing for Sutton Place, located in East Providence. I'd like to introduce Jeff Swanson of the Development Division, who will present this action item. Jeff, please take it away.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner Orth, and good morning to all commissioners. This is Jeff Swanson, Development Officer, and as you just heard, we are here today to request a firm commitment based on a preservation application submitted by One Neighborhood Builders for Sutton Place. This project is an arm's length acquisition and rehabilitation of an existing market rate property located in East Providence. Specifically, we are here to request approval for a permanent loan of up to $1,885,000, a home loan of $1,392,497, a housing trust loan of $1,189,921, and there will be a separate action presented to the Affordable Housing Trust for approval of a preservation loan. The Sutton Place development contains two existing buildings with a total of 36 units. The buildings are almost identical. There are 22 one-bedroom and 14 studio units. Once the closing happens and the restrictions are put in place, 9 of the units will be restricted to tenants that are below 30% AMI. 5 units will be restricted to 50%, my screen just went blank. 5 units will be restricted to 60% AMI, 5 units at 70% AMI, with the final 17 units at 80% AMI. There's an operating subsidy that we are pairing with the 9 30% AMI units. They will be paired either with a project-based voucher or particular care funds. The City of East Providence has been very supportive of this transaction. They have targeted this neighborhood as an area to preserve existing affordable housing, and they actually essentially put this transaction together, knowing that the current owner was not interested in maintaining this asset for the long term. They worked with the seller to find a suitable buyer that was interested in making a long-term investment into the city and to make a conversion to affordable housing. The city also very quickly provided a letter supporting the underwriting assumption of using the 8% housing tax law, and they also are contributing $200,000 of equity from a fund that is designated to this district of the city. Since the project received preliminary approval, the developer has conducted additional due diligence. Now, with the benefit of a complete CNA and detailed environmental reports, the developer is being forced to address a variety of environmental and code issues in addition to the work that was originally contemplated at preliminary approval. As a result of this additional scope, the total development cost has increased approximately $650,000. Or 12% from preliminary. Virtually all of this cost is related to an increase in the construction budget. However, also because of the environmental issues, a renovation that was originally anticipated to incur with the tenants remaining in their units is now going to require tenants to relocate for approximately 2 weeks at a time. So now we've introduced a relocation budget of $40,000 where previously we had none. We also now have the benefit of the appraisal and some additional market information. The unrestricted market value based on unrestricted market rents indicates a value of $3.3 million. The current purchase price has dropped from dropped to $3,320,000, down from $3,420,000 at preliminary. We note that that despite the increased total development cost, the developer is not changing their request for soft money. They are meeting the increased TDC from a variety of sources with the use of the market rate information. We are able to support a larger first mortgage. As I mentioned, that the acquisition price has decreased. And now during the construction period, they are going to use cash flow from operations as a source. So also we think of note is that utilizing the formula that wrote in Rhode Island Housing's guidelines to calculate developer fee, that as a result of the increased rehab expenses and higher TDC, One Neighborhood Builders would be entitled to a fee of just under $400,000. However, in an effort for cost containment, staff is requiring the fee to remain at the $300,000 where it was at preliminary approval. At this time, staff recommends and supports approval of this transaction because it is consistent with the overall goals of our organization. Once this rehab is complete, the project will provide rehabbed and code-compliant affordable housing for a variety of low-income households with a long-term deed restriction recorded at closing. The project is structured to provide affordable housing across a range of income levels, and most notably, there are 9 units for households at the various lowest level of income levels. The benefit will also benefit from a new loan of nearly $1.9 million. And it's also rather exciting to note that this will allow the City of East Providence to join the 6 other Rhode Island housing cities and towns that have currently met the state's goal for affordability. So that was a lot to digest, and I apologize for the delivery as I stumbled a couple of times, but I will do my best to field questions.
Great. Jeff, I think that was a great presentation. Thank you. Like to request a motion to recommend approval of committee action item number 4 to the Board of Commissioners, please.
So moved. Liz Tanner, second.
Motion's been moved and seconded. I'd like to open up for discussion and questions. I think that this transactions fits into the deal type, which you'd call a preservation of a naturally occurring affordable housing financed without tax credits. In my mind, on the spectrum of deal types, you have maybe at the upper end, say like the Paragon Mill that we just talked about, a urban mill conversion in need of heavy subsidy. Then you could have an urban new construction deal, again, heavy subsidy, probably 9% credits. And then you work your way down through, you know, acquisition rehabs using 4% credits, and then down to, you know, a preservation, you know, of a already affordable housing product without finance, without tax credits. So in my mind, this would be a transaction that should have the least amount of subsidy going into it. In a 4% transaction, that your capital stack is usually on an ACT rehab is about 70% debt, 30% equity. This one is the reverse. It's like 30%, you know, hard debt, 70% soft sources, and about $100,000 a unit in subsidy. On its face, it really doesn't strike me as a good candidate for this type of program. Could you talk to maybe conceptually how you're looking at this type of program, and how this deal fits into that program?
Hi, Jeff. Before you start, this is Eric. Can I just jump in and
please,
Kevin. Kevin, I appreciate your comments, and I think I would agree with you that this was a NOAA transaction. Perhaps we presented it as a NOAA transaction at preliminary, but as we and the developer did a more investigation between the preliminary and firm, discovered that the scope of work increased. So this is no longer, and I would argue this is no longer a NOAA transaction, but a preservation transaction, acquisition rehab, given the scope of work. And Jeff talked about the scope has expanded to the point where now we have to relocate. Initially, there was no expectation that they will have to relocate the tenants. So the scope has grown, and as a result, this is an acquisition rehab project. And so when you look at it from that lens, typically, as you mentioned, that an ACT rehab is really what 4% credits. This deal isn't that large and is not attracting kind of 4%. So we're doing this transaction with soft resources in terms of attacking an ACT rehab transaction. And if you look at it in that context and look at the subsidy in terms of per unit at $100,000, I would argue that we get a big bang for our buck at $100,000, because if you look at getting units that are unrestricted to being restricted for 40 years at $100,000 a unit, when you look at your typical tax credit, and we could do the math on it, we are usually putting in subsidizing that at, you know, $250,000 to $300,000 a unit. Jeff, I don't know if you had anything else to add.
I do not.
Okay, so I'll get into some specific questions then. You mentioned the rents, that they will be restricted with affordability restrictions. So what are the rents currently, and how does that compare to the projected rents?
So this this building was part of a portfolio purchased a couple of years ago, and by the seller's own admission, they're just leaving tenants on a month-to-month basis and kind of bumping along, because this property was identified early on as something they weren't going to hold for the long term. I have a rudimentary rent roll, and the efficiency units currently have rents that range from $700 to $775 a unit, and they one-bedroom rents are in the $8 to $850 range. There's a couple of outliers, but that's generally where they are. We have discussed this in significant detail with the developer. There are a handful of tenants that are really cost burdened by rents, but this is pretty much the lowest rent they could find in this area where they want to live. There's a handful of tenants that will actually see their rents go down. The rest of the building will see some step rent increases that will take place on 6-month intervals over 1 to 2 years. And based on the information available, there will be, at the end of the day, no one in the project that is cost burdened with the maximum percent of household income going to housing to be capped at 32%. All the units have a pretty significant advantage over the comparable either max rents in that category or market.
So what is the projected rent I see on the one bedrooms at the not the voucher holders, but at the one bedroom at, say, the 80% level, that's the majority of them, is a gross rent of $1,176. And so you're saying that currently they're at $8 to $850?
Yes.
So I don't have my 12C in front of me, but that sounds like at least a 30% rent increase.
It is, but I think the alternative would be that if this building 38%. Was flipped, if this building were flipped to a typical investor, they would see a 40 to 50% increase, because the new owner would be focused on maximizing the cash flow in their bottom line, and they would be probably not making the environmental improvements, but making some cosmetic improvements to the units, and they would then be in a position to hike their rents up according to the appraisal. They would be able to hike the rents up to around $1,050 for the studios and $1,250 for the one bedrooms.
Okay, so in summation, then staff's determination is that this program will provide for a higher level of rehab and a lower increase in rents than would otherwise happen if this were at free market.
That's true, and to which I would add, by putting the long-term restriction in place, we, as you all know, we typically see an increase of 1 to 2% in affordable rents, whereas the market typically sees anywhere from 3 to 5. So over coming years, well, for the 80% units, the gap is not too large. We will expect in coming years that that gap will widen significantly.
Okay. I think that is a good use of program sources to get a higher level of rehab than otherwise would happen and or lower rent increases than would happen. I'm sorry for monopolizing the time here. I do have one other comment, and that is you mentioned an appraisal was done with an unrestricted market value of $3.3 million. And then there's another appraisal. I guess it was done for the loan purposes using perhaps this restricted rent values, albeit it, although those are really raising up, of $2.25 million. So how do we reconcile the significant difference there?
I'm only privy to one appraisal, so I'm going to hope we're talking about the same one.
Well, I see you mentioned in your presentation an appraised value of $3.3 million, and then I'm looking at the write up on page 2, loan to value test, and it has a appraisal evaluation of $2.25 million.
Got it. So yeah, so we requested three different values when we commissioned the appraisal, and we use them for different purposes. One was to explore the concerns that staff had, and I think the credit committee shared based on the comments at preliminary. We wanted to know what would happen if this property was put on the open market to be sold just as is and was marketed by a broker. What was the estimate of value that it would fetch? And that's essentially the price that the buyer and seller attempted to agree upon. So not included in my write-up, but in the appraisal report, which we'd be happy to share with you, is that value would be $3.3 million. I think I shared a little bit, East Providence has been very interested in adding to their stock of affordable housing. So this property was not put on the market. It was actually brokered, if you will, kind of the deal was kind of assembled by some people in East Providence that were interested in finding a long-term, a party that was interested in making a long-term investment in affordable housing in the city. Then the as complete value in the appraisal is what you mentioned of the $2.25 million, and that is instead of using 36 market rate units to generate the NOI, they assumed that we would put in place the restrictions that I presented to you. And effectively that does, affordable housing, is lower rents, and so unsurprisingly it's a lower NOI. And when you cap that lower NOI, that generated the $2.25 million. The third value I mentioned really is replacement cost, and we use that for a variety of our home and HDF forms to understand what kind of level of due diligence we need to do and what kind of level of insurance.
Okay, great. I will now give the floor over to Nick and Liz and Maria if you have any comments or questions.
Just a couple, and thank you for those comments, Kevin. This is predicated in large measure on the impact of the neighborhood in terms of the future. So can you talk a little bit about what the contiguous properties are and what they're like and what their situation is?
I can. This property is kind of right on the boundary between kind of as the neighborhood shifts from residential to a little bit more of a commercial feel. So if you were to go, and my hands up in the air here, if you were to go further east, the neighborhood would transition to largely residential uses, kind of neighborhood feel, if you will, and those residential uses would typically be of a smaller scale. Right. Some buildings that I'm guessing from the exterior are kind of 4 to 6 units, transitioning then to some single family and buildings that are 2s and 3s. There are a couple of very similar projects of and similar in appearance and similar in size and age to this one. that are in the immediate vicinity and generally kind of north and south. And then as you go a little further towards Providence, towards the water west, it transitions to some smaller commercial uses, kind of a few service and light industrial and kind of tech office properties.
Good, thank you.
And the other thing that I can share is that the city is focused very heavily on this. They call it the waterfront district, and that's where the $200,000 of funds came from. That they had, the city has a line item in their budget to support what they call the waterfront district, which is essentially this neighborhood.
Would we likely to see future applications from adjoining properties?
We might. I know that there's an application in already, actually, where One Neighborhood Builders has been awarded the developer of record in an RFP process that the city did a little bit further south in the Riverside neighborhood. There was a site that where there was a building that was raised and contaminated and reached the end of its useful life. And somehow the city has gained control of that site, and One Neighborhood Builders is proposing to build a 16-unit affordable building project on that. And they have an application in with Rhode Island Housing's ancillary funding group. So they are focused in this area, and the city is targeted as an area that really is prime to add some affordable units.
I'm pleased to see Neighborhood Builders extend their reach. They're a good developer. Have they done much work outside Providence before this?
To my knowledge, they're just starting to explore beyond their kind of their traditional Olneyville neighborhood. And that they have dramatically ramped up their capacity as well as their balance sheet, but I'll let somebody else on the staff speak to that who may know more.
You're correct, Jeff. This is their first expansion outside of sort of the Olneyville neighborhood.
Is there a strategy to do more of this?
Yes, we've had a number of conversations with One Neighborhood Builder builders, and Jen is really building her staff. They have a very robust development team now, I think, of six professionals, and we're seeing a number of transactions. So we'll be hearing from them quite frequently over the next few years. And so my understanding is their current geographic area is a 12-mile radius from their current office, which extends to the outer extension of that radius is to East Providence. From what I understand, they may be expanding that geographic area, but for now, that's what it is. Also, I'd like to mention, Chairman, that NeighborWorks is also doing a transaction in East Providence, across from City Hall, Ivory Place, which is a home ownership and rental development. The City of East Providence, their leadership has reached out to our top performing CDC partners and reached out to NeighborWorks as well as one to partner to help them address affordable housing in the city. So we have a number of transactions that One Neighborhood as well as NeighborWorks is working with the city on.
Just one last comment. The prospect of additional development makes our credit committee chairman, Kevin, even more on target to be more efficient, because these very quickly become precedents in terms of the use of funds and the amount of funds and the relative percentage of allocation overall. So not that you don't do that anyway. I wasn't suggesting that. But it's something to keep an extra eye on, I think, because it could generate future developments. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Maria. Thanks. I just had one question. It ties back to Kevin's question. First off, I think this is a great development. I think it's terrific that One Neighborhood Builders is expanding in East Providence. Seems like a great location. But the only thing that gave me a little pause was the 80% units only being 5% below market. And I think I understood the response to Kevin's question that, you know, we anticipated the market rents to go up, so the gap would be bigger. But I don't know, does the 5% give you any pause? This didn't seem like that much of a difference to me.
Can I ask you to elaborate a little more? Is it, are you worried about 5% in terms of, is it enough of a delta to attract tenants, or are you just worried
yeah.
that it's not enough
yes.
subsidy?
Actually, the first part, this, is that enough of a delta?
We talked a lot about that, and in all honesty, 1NB proposed 100%, and they were pretty confident they could get it. It's something we looked at, and it's something we factored in, frankly, with the 5% vacancy rate, thinking that those units might be slightly higher, and we would expect the vacancy credit loss on the 30% and the lower AMI units to be virtually nothing. So we have worked in underwriting to address it that way. I guess I'd say immediately it's a little bit of a concern, but based on the knowing some of the household incomes for tenants that are in place and where the market is going and the quality project it's going to become, we think it's reasonable.
Okay. Yeah, I think trying to balance that risk with other variables makes sense, like you did. I think, you know, my gut would have been a little bit more closer to 10%, but it sounds like you've got enough cushion in another place in case that number's a little too high.
That's the thought process, and we obviously, we were, as I noted, looking to cover a gap, and we were doing everything we could to cover the gap without having to commit additional soft money. It's, you know, you've kind of stumbled into what our balancing act is, that we, you know, want these groups to be responsible and take on their own problems, and you know, taking out a larger permanent loan was one of the ways that they proposed to address it.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional comments or questions on this one? Okay, hearing none. Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote on this motion?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Sutton Place to the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth.
Aye.
Chairman Resines.
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner.
Aye.
Commissioner Berry.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Nicole. That concludes our agenda items, and then we just move on to a discussion item, which is an update on our pipeline. If Eric, you could please present that.
Thank you, Chairman Orf. Quick update in terms of the pipeline. Quite busy in the development department. As many of you know, we're currently reviewing our 2021 tax credit proposals. We received 11 applications. That's moving along quite nicely. We're on par with bringing recommendations before the board for June. So we continue to go through that process. Also, last Friday, we received 10 application proposals for our latest round for workforce housing. We're going through those applications now. Again, we're shooting for making recommendations for funding for June with the outside. June is the date, but we may be able to make it to May. We're trying to push for that. We received 10 applications, a little over $12 million in requests throughout the state. So excited about the proposals. We're still in the infancy stages, obviously, and reviewing those applications. In addition to that, we have 12 new deals that are currently under underwriting now that potentially can result in over 1,100 units. So they're in different stages of underwriting. So we'll have transactions over the next few months coming to credit committee and hopefully to the board. So that's where we are in terms of pipeline. We have a number of deals that are preliminary we're working through to get for firm commitment and closing. I'll pause there and answer any questions anyone may have.
Eric, this is Kevin. I wasn't present at this meeting that you had with two of the developers of our current workforce housing projects, but I understand that it was vociferously mentioned by both of them about the Rhode Island Housing kind of imposed, I guess, extra expense and effort in the legal documentation for our requirements. Could you speak to that and maybe some measures that have been taken to hopefully reduce that burden for future projects?
Yes. I'll start the conversation, and I'm sure there are others on the call, specifically maybe Nicole would like to comment as well. Yes, we had that conversation. It was a very candid, it was actually a good conversation to hear back from development partners. Specifically, there were some comments about the legal costs associated with those transactions. And I guess my comment I would like to make is that we selected, we have a roster of attorneys, and we selected the particular closing attorney for these transactions based on their experience closing workforce housing transactions in Boston, with the hope of kind of streamlining and reducing the cost. We got we received quotes from them, which we shared with the borrower. In one particular case, one transaction, it exceeded substantially succeeded the quote, and it was a combination of things on both sides, right? And some kind of starts and fits that drove up the cost. They reduced their fees to make up that a difference. But one of the things that we've been talking about internally is that, and we anticipated this, right, that it just takes some time to sort of get a system in place. And both of these transactions were unique. They were different. So we're kind of building it as we're flying and generating those template documents. So we anticipated the cost to be a little higher. So I think after doing or completing 5 to 7 transactions, I think we'll have a better sense of what those costs are, and we hope that we'll be able to drive down some of those costs after we do more transactions. The other transaction we had, the cost was actually $5,000 more, if I'm correct, than our quote. And quite frankly, there was some delays on the developer's end. You know, that's just the cost of doing business, right? So that's where from my perspective, we continue to work on this. We've had some internal meetings. We're scheduled to have some additional meetings to just try to streamline this and where we can achieve some efficiencies. But it's a work in progress. I don't know if James or Nicole want to add anything, but we've been working on this, and we'll continue to work through this to try to make the process a little smoother.
Yeah, I mean, I would just add a little in that, you know, I think it's important that as we go through with newer programs, particularly with the workforce housing, that we make sure that our touch is commensurate with our investment and that we don't treat a $500,000 investment in a workforce program the same as a, you know, multimillion-dollar investment in a tax credit project. And, you know, that's something that we have to work on fine-tuning internally, that, you know, we have to be comfortable with some level of risk that is appropriate to the money that we have out on the street. And I think, you know, as Eric said, it was really useful to hear from our development partners. I mean, not just about the legal side, but about some other things that you know, we might be able to do a little bit differently. I think it's going to be an evolving process with this next round and probably subsequent rounds to get it to where it's a matter of course process rather than one that we're still learning about. But it's to the extent that our partners are going to be open to sharing their feedback, and I felt like it was a great and candid session, we're here to hear that, and we need to use that to get better. So, you know, I have some thoughts about how we're going to do that going forward, and as we look at this second round of projects, we'll be able to apply that somewhat. But I anticipate learning even more from this, as it's a larger and more diverse group of applicants. So I'm kind of excited to see where this goes.
And this is Nicole. Just to kind of add, I think that both James and Eric appropriately kind of explain what we're trying to do to kind of help streamline this process. I was not privy to that conversation either, Kevin, but I have taken the time to kind of speak to my team as well as set up some conversations with our outside counsel. I think we also are looking to kind of make sure that we properly and clearly articulate to our outside counsel what our needs are and what our expectations are. So we're working to kind of make sure that we as a team do that in order to be efficient with cost and with time. I think we also are trying to figure out what efficiencies are need to happen that are may not necessarily be on the legal side of things, but in some of the other areas in which we roll out these deals. So I think we're all taking a holistic view on figuring out the best way to kind of roll out these deals in a way that's efficient for both Rhode Island Housing and our partners.
And I had a question. I'm not sure if, Eric, were you indicating that the outside counsel is in Boston or are they Rhode Island-based firm?
They're a Boston-based firm.
Yes.
Nicole, can I get some information on that offline?
Sure. I'll definitely have no problem reaching out to you, Liz. I'll touch base with you. This is the roster that we had approved in 2019 by the Board of Commissioners. It is a roster of counsel on our real estate development side. It is a combination of law firms, large, mid-sized, and small law firms, both located in Rhode Island and in Massachusetts. One of the items that we noted when we presented it to the board is that there is the level of skill set with respect to the types of deals and the complex structure of the deals that we do requires us to have a broad set of outside counsel to support those needs. But I'm happy to give you a call.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I think it was a productive meeting. I called for the meeting, so I'll take the blame for it. The good news is they were honest and candid about what the issues are. Some of it is growing pains, but I don't want to wait to wear teenagers to deal with those growing pains. So I think having, as James pointed out, having a follow-up, and Eric, you point out, is a good idea. I would have been terrible to convene a meeting and no one came, and more importantly, when we had a funding round, no one applied. So we haven't somehow too far out of the lane, or else it wouldn't have applied. But it's something we need to constantly be aware of. I understand, Carol and James, don't you have regular meetings with the larger nonprofits? Is that right, or I'm mistaken?
That's correct.
Maybe there are similar forums for for-profit developers or workforce housing developers. You might want to think about that. But Erica, thank you for convening the meeting.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions about deal pipeline? Great, hearing none. Nicole, would you please? I have to make a. I have to ask for a motion. Mm-hmm. Have a motion to adjourn the meeting, please.
So moved.
I heard two, so I'll take that as a motion in a second. So, Nicole, would you please conduct a roll call vote?
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Nicole Clement. When I call your name, if you are in favor of adjourning this meeting, please respond by saying aye or opposed by saying nay. Committee Chairman Orth?
Aye.
Chairman Retzinas?
Aye.
Commissioner Tanner?
Aye.
Commissioner Berry?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. The motion passes. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. The meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Credit Committee is now adjourned. Thank you all very much for your participation today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.